Hi, this is Larry, and this is our part two of answering our midlife crisis questions. Again, thank you, Beate, for setting this up. A list of 20 questions, and I thought I would get two calls to get through. So that's why we have an evening call for our, I did the morning session to describe the group and the group how-to manual. I hope you did get that 10-page how-to manual. We've got 20 questions. So I'm going to start with the Julia question. What do you think about a correlation between dismissive avoidant attachment style created in childhood and a midlife crisis? Because almost every person who has a spouse in midlife crisis describes them with that type of behavior prior to the midlife crisis and throughout their marriage. What Julia's saying is I've been looking around at people with midlife crisis guys, and what they're doing is they're showing me that there's a dismissive avoidant attachment style. And for those of you who don't know what an attachment style is, that's a negative way of describing not functional relationship attachment style. So what she's saying is this behavior is dismissive and avoiding. You know, does this come as a child create the midlife crisis? So let's think about this simply. In your childhood, you're awake for 16 hours a day, essentially 10 years. That's 53,000 hours. So 53,000 hours, you have all the inputs, all the attitudes, all the body language, the gestures, the eye rolls, the mood swings, everything is coming in those 53,000 hours of both your mother and your father. And so that's a lot of input. That's a lot of content coming in. So during that content, all of the troubles of those people, whatever their troubles are as adults, they now are coming into your and landing and storing in your subconscious mind. All of those are the 53,000 hours of information. So when you think about your midlife crisis husband, you're thinking about the 53,000 hours that he was exposed to his mother and his father. And so in order to start answering questions like Julia's asking, you have to ask yourself, what do I know about that mother and that father in those 53,000 hours of the first 10 years of that boy's childhood? And as you start to look at the little snippets and stories and sharings from sisters and brothers and so on, when you look at everything you know about that mother and father, you're looking at the content of what made this man what he is. So what is a midlife crisis? A midlife crisis is pain that's delivered by mom and dad in those 10 years. Now, here's the other part you don't normally connect. What happens to that boy happened to him as a unique individual. So let's say he was a really sensitive kid. As a really sensitive kid, that changes everything. He could be in a group of siblings, like five siblings, and they all of them could be pretty much resilient kids. But this kid that you married, he's the most sensitive kid in the family. But nobody really made a big deal about that. It was just something that he was. And so he took the 53,000 hours very differently than his resilient brothers and sisters. And so they kind of bounced around, bounced back, and they said, you know, that's the way it was. That's the way they were. And it doesn't bother us. We just thought that's the way it's supposed to be. But he, as the sensitive kid, was essentially saying, wow, that wasn't right. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And so here he's doing in childhood what he later doesn't do as an adult. Like, that's not right. What happened to me was not right. It wasn't good. So what happens when he becomes an adult? The messages from those 10 years, the inputs, the 53,000 hours of voice inflection, body language, attitude, action, mood swings, all of those of the mother and the father are coming in. And how they affected him are coming in, because they're all coming in, and then they affect him. They move him a certain way. And you're not really there in that childhood, so you don't really know. All you can do with childhood is take guesses and approximations. That's all you can do. But what you have to look at is if that kid was really sensitive and he did not really like what he got in those 53,000 hours, he resisted it and resisted it. And when you met him in his 20s and 30s, he was subduing it, pushing it down over and over and over again. And finally, when he's 40, 35, 45, whatever age he gets to, the messages of childhood and his interaction with them come to a head, and they explode into life, and they knock him out. they knock out his personality. You know, a lot of you are asking questions that really resemble, how could he do that? How could he possibly not know? And the reason he cannot know is because his conscious personality has been knocked out by the power of the events of those 53,000 hours. And you don't know what those events are. It wouldn't help you really to know what those events were. But what we know is the theme of abandonment any kind, abuse any kind, or neglect any kind. And if he had two of those, or three of those, or one of those, and he was really sensitive and really just hated them or resisted them, or they angered him or hurt him, or like whatever happens, when those all come forward, the mother and the father's messages, the most painful message, come forward, all of a sudden he doesn't know what to do. And one of you asked about the death of a father. That's a classic midlife crisis turn on. Nothing could be happening. There could be no relationship with the father or death of the mother. There could be no relationship with the mother, no relationship with the father. Everything's very even keel. Every sudden, all of a sudden at 55 or 51 or 42, the mother or the father dies. When the mother or father dies, the whole thing turns on. And that the death of a parent can turn on a midlife crisis. So let's go to Katie. She says, is death of a parent considered something that could cause a midlife crisis at 50 years old? Yes, even 60 years old. And then Katie says, why do they do the most hurtful things to their spouse when it is way out of their character for them? Now that phrase that Katie's using there, it is way out of the character. What is their character? The character is the conscious mind. And now we're getting back to the map that I have up on the screen. Their conscious mind, which is always in the pursuit of happiness, has no interest in the group's methods. No interest in the group's methods. But what has the group done? The group has stored the most painful messages of the father and the mother. That's when the mother and the father were at their worst. That's when those messages came in. And those have been saved and stored. And then when they get to that certain age, why is it way out of character for them? Because it's not their character. It's not who they are. They're being possessed by the mother and the father, by the messages of the mother and father. And so their whole priority system has now been transferred over to the most painful messages of mom and dad. Amy said, is it possible for them to, the way that Amy wrote this, this is really good in terms of, come on, why can't it be this way? She says, is it possible for them to wake up from such bad behaviors? Can this end like some flip light switch? Can it be trusted? How do they proceed with reconciliation? And when they still want to financially abuse you and keep that kind of information highly secret? If a spouse comes back, is the spouse or was the affair partners a more permanent thing? I noticed every time things weren't going right between him and his affair partner, the more he would monster at me during those years. He was even irritated with me once because I wasn't who she was, even though I had nothing to do with them. So that's what Amy wrote. She's saying, come on, how can this happen? We don't understand what it's like to have chaos given to you in your childhood. We don't know what that's like, unless it's done to you, and then you know. But you don't know what it's like. So if your husband had the worst, the most painful messages of the mother, the most painful messages of the father, given to him, and let's say that your husband was really sensitive. What is that? That's a planting bed to plant the seeds of what will become the personality of the midlife crisis. Because it's not like them. Because they have to get rid of their normal personality, and they have to take on the painful messages of the parents. That's really what midlife crisis is. It's taking on the painful, most painful messages of the parents. And when that person, and now I'm getting back to the group now, think about your midlife crisis husband and think about the inner child. What does the inner child specialize in? Fear. So if the inner child is afraid of something in real time, the inner child will tell that new personality what to do and what to be afraid of and how to handle fear. Give them all the instructions. The parents, mom and the dad, what are they specializing in? Judgment. What does that mean? They're going to judge everything. That means when that mother and that father are telling this new personality what to do and how to handle you, what is happening to this new personality? Mother is judging. The father is judging. And if the mother was particularly judging in the childhood, this husband of yours is going to be particularly judging of you. What about teenage behavior? Why is that? Because where's the advice coming from to this midlife crisis man? It's coming from his inner child, his mother, and his father of those first 10 years. And they're here today in real time. Only they're literally back. They're operating back in that time of the first 10 years. So they're literally operating in the future, but they're living in the past. And everything about the group is keeping him in the past. Everything the group does, nothing about the future. Everything's about the past. So Jenna says, does love just go away for them at bomb drop? How can they be there for so many years and then poof, they're gone? Now, why are they so childish? Like when they are trying to pull something over on their parents. There's that, what I was just talking about. If the child takes him over, what is the child going to do? Act like the teenager or the kid who's trying to pull something over on the parents. Then Jenna says, I'm not his mom or dad. Why would they hurt the one they're so committed their life to? Is it because they know that we love them so much and maybe they haven't been meeting our normal expectations? You do not want to get into the whys of midlife crisis. Core idea that you want to have in your mind about the midlife crisis is it happened because you married a chaos kid. It didn't happen for any other reason. It happened because you married a chaos kid. And so like, well, are you looking for somebody to blame? Well, you want to blame yourself? Well, what are you going to blame yourself? You were in love. You were in love. And why did you fall in love with a chaos kid? Because you had no idea he was a chaos kid. Because when you met him, he wasn't a chaos kid. In most cases, you never can see it. You can never see the childhood pain. And when you are meeting and falling in love, you don't ask questions about childhood. You don't even know what it means. So how could you take responsibility for saying, I married a chaos kid and that's why I'm in this mess? That's not what you want to be asking. You don't want to be asking questions like, why doesn't he, and how come, and maybe I haven't been meeting his needs, and maybe I didn't, you know, do this, and maybe I didn't do that. Don't go down that rabbit hole. It's not going to help you. What will help you is a far better idea, which is to ask the question, what can I learn from this? And what is the this I'm talking about? It's the new latest trouble of your midlife crisis character. That's what you can learn from this. What does learning require? It requires pain. It requires pain and the motivation pain creates. So what is this midlife crisis man doing? He's providing the pain that generates motivation and the hunger to learn. So when you ask the question, what can I learn from this? That's another point of going to your higher self in the route. When you're going on this route, you reach your higher self, you can ask, what can I learn from this? That's a great thing to ask. What can I learn from this? Far better than asking, why was he so irritated with me because, you know, I wasn't who she was. I had nothing to do with them. All of that is a waste of your energy. It's far better to ask, what can I learn from this? Ask your higher self, what can I learn from this? And so when Janet is asking, does love just go away? Love just goes away because the personality goes away. When you lose the personality of the guy who loves, you can't get the love anymore, right? It makes perfect sense. And then she asks a question about he couldn't perform sexually. And she's asking a question about why he can't perform sexually when she asks him to go to the doctor and he hasn't been snuggly for a while. All of his behaviors are governed by the group. All of his behaviors are governed by his inner child, who's 6 years old, by his mother and by his father and by his Freddie. And what do they do? The child's in charge of fear. So he's going to be afraid and he's going to do crazy things that are all driven by fear. Mother's in charge of judgment. Father's in charge of judgment. Now we have to ask, well, what kind of judgment is mom going to generate in this guy? What kind of judgment is dad going to generate? Well, it's all going to be how they were in those first 10 years. That's what you can watch for. Julie said, I'm curious about how you would explain a midlife crisis for someone who isn't a chaos kid. My husband comes from a supportive, loving family. His parents have been married almost 60 years and adore each other. However, my husband has been having a textbook midlife crisis for almost 5 years and is off the rails. He has become everything he was raised not to be. I come from a family of chaos, yet I'm stable and well-grounded with my values and integrity intact. All right, now here's what looks like a really huge mystery. Here's Julie coming from a chaos childhood, while the husband supposedly comes from a wonderful, happily married couple. That's the way it looks like. Oh, geez, oh, that doesn't make sense at all. Well, what explains this story that Julie's writing? You do not know what life was like behind closed doors. You do not know that that kid was a very sensitive kid. You don't know how sensitive he was in his childhood. You don't know. So maybe his father was doing something behind closed doors you know nothing about, that he hated and resented. Or maybe it was his mother doing something that he hated and resented. Even though they were in a happy married couple and the white picket fence, they still did something that he really couldn't stand and didn't want. And how does it show up? It shows up in the midlife crisis. Because whatever was going on behind closed doors is going to come out as the midlife crisis. Your kids show you, show the world what you are. And so the reason that Julie is coming from a chaotic background and has values and integrity is because she's what's called a bucker, B-U-C-K-E-R. That's like a bucking bronco that throws off the rider. And so what, if we dug into Julie's childhood, we would find that there's all kinds of chaos in her home, but she, even as a child, is saying, I am never going to be like this. That's the language of a bucker right there. I am never going to be like them. I am never going to be like this. I'm not. And so that's how buckers talk. So here's, she marries a guy who comes from a really nice family, but we don't know what went on behind closed doors. We don't know what hates he had and what demoralization he had or whatever he had going on with the supposedly happy couple. We have no way of knowing it. And then Paula writes, my husband had an affair for 9 months, but he still lives at home. He's a chaos kid, alcoholic, depressed father. Parents split when he was 8. Mother always very controlling, told him what to do, where to study, what jobs to take. I think he has abandonment problems. 2 years ago, he thought that I had an affair. When I made plans to go on a short trip without him, he suddenly ran off to the other woman and stayed there a couple of days. When I told him that he lives his life and I live mine, he didn't come back for 2 days. It looks like every time I'm trying to detach and move on, he loses it and runs off to the other woman. He doesn't want to divorce, and neither do I. How do you cope with a husband who's still living at home, refuses to leave, but runs off to the other woman when he thinks that you're moving on? What if I made him leave? Does he give up on me because I am abandoning him? All right, so Paul has got a twist and turn story. Okay, the reason it's a twist and turn story is because here's a guy who is dependably not consistent in anything he believes. He is governed by the group days, nights, and weekends. And the group is very, very situational and very erratic because they're essentially children with no value system. So what she's saying is, I've given him license to live with me, and I've given license to stay with me until he wants to go off with his plaything. And I have not said, if you want to be married to me, I have self-respect. And I have self-respect, which means that if you're going to be with her, you can't come home because this is not your home. You're not with me, you're with her. And you don't have to tell them this in an angry way. This is just a very patient, restoring order to your life. That's what you have to do. You're restoring order to your life. And that's true for all women. And I've had a lot of women who keep midlife crisis men. And the reason they keep them is because they have this religion about marriage, that they have to be married. They have to stay married. Two bodies, one house, one roof. That's the way it's got to be. And they're trying to protect that under any and all conditions. And so what happens is they give away their value system, their sense of what's important to them. They just give it away. And so when you have a midlife crisis man who decides he wants a girlfriend and you don't release him from the house and say, hey, stay out until you decide it's me or her. You can have me, but you can't have her. So now you lay down a law, a rule. So I've seen a lot of women who have midlife crisis men, and they don't want that man to leave them. They just don't want it because they have this protection of marriage, this doctrine that they have to do. But every time you keep a man, regardless of whether you call him husband or not, when you keep a man and he has another woman, what are you doing? You're saying, I'm living in Utah. I'm living in Utah. A husband can have many wives in Utah because we're Mormons. And this is what we can do. We can have many wives, no problem. Well, do you really believe that? Because I haven't met a woman in the United States who lives in a Mormon belief system and says a man can have any as many wives as he wants. They just can't do that. You look at women anywhere, look at them on TV and movies, a woman cannot have a man with his love divided between her and somebody else. She can't have it. No woman can have that. Now you have to ask yourself, well, why do I have it? Why am I allowing myself to be with a man, forget that his title is husband, when he's in a midlife crisis, it's not even the man I married. It's somebody else. It's some other contortion that I don't know anything about. So I really need to say, you know, you're really a great guy, but until you only love me, I can't have you back in the house because I'm literally giving up on all my values. And I can't give up on my values. This is what I value. This is what is a big part of me. And I need to feel good about myself. And if you're with another woman, I can't feel good about myself because I can't share a man with other women. I just can't do it. I mean, it's not like I'm a prostitute who does that. I can't do that. You make a decision and then you let them know. This is how I live and this is what I value and this is what's important to me. When you are ready to make it important to me, I'm a one-man woman. When you're ready to make it that important to you, then come back and let me know. Calmly let them know. So you do not want to let a man have the title of husband and also let him have another woman. And then Julie says, does a midlife crisis always include another person or can they just go through it without seeking an affair? The need to seek an affair has everything to do with the child, the mother, and the father. Whatever the father did. For instance, if the father was a cheater and he cheated on his wife when that boy was a child, that's what I call the cheating gene. And then if the cheating gene is in the father, it was in the son. And so now he has this cheating gene. And I've noticed a thing about men with cheating genes. That's a cheating gene, remember, is the father cheated on the wife back in the childhood. And so he was looking for other women. And so that gene transfers right into the boy. He doesn't even know how. It could be a secret, by the way. It could be a complete secret that the father had affairs on the mother. Complete secret, boy still gets it. And now the boy has a magnetic ability to attract women. Just these are not normal women. These are women without value systems. And they're attracting those women, and they got no problem doing it. And it's almost magnetic. It's almost like, gee, I wasn't even trying. And that's all because the cheating gene came from the father. So if you marry a boy who comes from a father that cheated on the mother, you're going to be open up to that boy is not going to be faithful to you. And then Christine said, my husband shows so many times per day in little subconscious ways that he's still connected to me and loves me. But if he realizes he's doing it, he tries to backpedal. There's an emotional other woman that is skirting around the edges and is going further, whether he seems determined to hold on, even though he doesn't seem to be invested in it, but he seems to be holding on. It feels like his life has been out of control for at least a year or so. And the only thing that can control that he can control is our relationship. And with that relationship, he's sabotaging it. So I don't know how to get him to see what's happening. He says that I'm perfect and he loves me. He's just doesn't feel in love right now. But throwing away an 18-year relationship over someone that often ignores his text, and it doesn't make sense to me. I just want you to know if there's a way to get him to recognize the situation and really think it through before he ruins our life completely. When a man chooses another woman as a friendship, as a texting relationship, as a long-distance relationship, however that man is choosing another woman, what he's doing is he's pouring his energy into another woman. And when he's pouring that energy into another woman, that's energy that should be going to you. He can't give that energy to her and to you. And so let's go back and look at Christine's statement. My husband shows me in many ways, subconscious ways, that he's still connected and loves me. Now you get the phrase, he shows in subconscious ways. Well, she's giving him a lot of credit. Because here's what this should read. My husband shows me many times a day in many little obvious ways that he loves me. And then she should be able to list all the ways he pours his energy into loving her. That's what it should say. But it doesn't say that. It says he's got this interest in another woman. A text relationship, a friendship, a long-distance relationship. It doesn't matter what the relationship is. That energy is still leaving you and going to her. And now the question you're asking yourself is, why am I letting him take his energy away from me and give it to her? And I'm sitting here going, yeah, I guess that's okay. I didn't want him around that much anyway. I mean, what is it you're saying to yourself? What are you saying to yourself about why this man can put his energy into another woman and you're okay with it? How come you're okay with it? How do you feel about yourself? And that's something that you want to dig into the group. Take a look at your inner child and find out what your inner child is doing. It's one of the things the 10-page article says, is it says, when you go into an office visit, you're going to define a problem very simply. So if we're talking about Christine's problem, the problem is my husband's not totally dedicated to me. That's the statement of the problem. My husband's not totally dedicated to me. So what you do is you sit down the child and you say, hey, little Christine, I was wondering why you're creating a husband who's not totally dedicated to me. And then your mother, mom, I was wondering why you're making a man that's not totally dedicated to me. And then you get your father in the office. Dad, I'm wondering why you're creating a man that's not totally dedicated to me. See, it's the same question to each of them. And when you attempt to answer it, what are you doing? You're going back to your childhood and looking for what that relationship between mom and dad was like, between dad and mom, and between you and your parents. What was the relationship like? What room was there for neglect or for abandonment or abuse? What happened back there? Because whatever happened back there, that's the answer that little Christine gives, that's the answer mom gives, and then that's the answer dad gives, based on the personalities they had at that time. And when you hear their answers, what they're doing is they're saying, the reason I gave you a man who's not dedicated to you is because you need to, and then they give you advice from their life back in that time. That's how they do it. That's how the group works. They say, I destroyed your world because you look like you were unhappy and needed a change of scenery. You know, whatever they're doing, it's always badly managed all the time. The group doesn't know how to manage a life. They don't. But they're working really hard on managing yours. And if you're not the leader of minds, they're going to manage your life. So Wanda wrote, as mothers, is there anything we can or should be doing differently to prevent this from happening to our sons? Nothing could probably stop it. But we tend to protect, shelter, and tell them what's right and wrong and manage our kids through things like this. So Wanda's asking the question, what can I do to protect my sons? Here's the thing that you've got to accept as a mother. You can't emotionally protect your sons from emotional pain. You can't protect your sons from emotional pain. Why not? Because emotion is not something you can protect anybody from. See, if there was physical danger to your children, you can call the police because the police will protect people from bodily harm. But what if somebody's insulting your children, belittling them, make them feel bad? There's no police you can call for that. So what do? You have to teach them how to control their emotion. That's the most valuable thing you can teach a boy or a girl. Teach them how to control your emotion. But it turns out you can't teach them how to control their emotion if you're not doing it yourself. If you're not going and managing your own group, how do you expect your children to listen to you? They're not. They're going to feel like you're not meaning what you're saying. They're feeling like you're not living what you're saying. And so they're going to tune you out. But if you're actually living this way, if you're managing your group, communicating with your higher self, talking to your subconscious mind and saying, this is the life I want, why can't your kids learn to do the same thing? They can do the same thing. And I found that kids, when parents start living this way, they pick this stuff up so fast, it's like they don't even need lessons. So that's what you can do as a mother. Live it yourself and be successful in controlling your own emotion. And then your kids will follow you. And I've seen that in my course over and over again. Katie wrote, why do they turn on their kids too? Talking about midlife crisis husbands. Why do they turn on their kids? Don't they know what they are doing? Do they want a relationship with their kids once they're out of the tunnel? So Katie's now asking a question. Doesn't he want to think about the future? Doesn't he want to think about his kids and his place in their lives? And doesn't he want to think about all that stuff? You got to understand, midlife crisis causes a man to lose the personality. That means the personality is nowhere near the surface. That means the personality is not there. The personality is being run by the group, the inner child, the mother, and the father of that first 10 years. That's what's happening. That's why he doesn't look like anything you recognize. And so when Katie asked the question, doesn't he know what he's doing? No, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's not driving the car. The body that you see moving around is being driven by the inner child, by the mother, and by the father, and by the Freddy. What is that? Fear, attack, judgment. That's what you're seeing. And it keeps on changing all the time. And then Wanda wrote, without pestering or pushing, this is very idealistic what Wanda wrote, without pestering or being pushy, but being genuine and not letting emotions take over. Why can't these midlife crisis guys be helped, directed, and supported? Why can't we share with them our findings from hours of research on what they can and could do within the relationship and within themselves? Why can't we tell them, open a notebook, write down your past memories, fears, write what they hate, what makes and made them angry, who and what has hurt them, what they want or could have had, changed or done, or what goals to work on. Now is the time to let it all out and rebuild before they fall into a deeper hole. It has to come from within, and they have to figure it out. I'm just confused why direction can't be provided. They may not accept it, but it may be on their mind, and they may want to try some of what they think is best. And I think what she was intending to say is what I think is best, because Wanda clearly knows what her midlife crisis husband should be doing. She clearly knows. And what she's asking here out of frustration is, why not solve this? Why not solve this? Why not listen to me? I've got all kinds of answers here for you. I can lessen your pain. I can do this. And so this sounds so, you know, realistic and so rational. Come on, I can solve this for you. Just let me help you. Well, who are you talking to? You're talking to his inner child, to his mother, and to his father. The man you married is gone. He's not there. He's put away deep inside, and you don't know where he is. What are you doing here? You're being rational. You're being reasonable. Do you really think that the inner child, the mother and the father, and Freddie are rational and reasonable in any way, shape, or form? Do you really think that's even remotely possible? This is the reason why when you try to help these people through behavior, that they rebel against it so badly. Because the child who has the right answer, the mother who has the right answer, the father who has the right answer, and the Freddie who always has the right answer, and is never wrong, by the way, will stone you before they'll let an idea inside. They're not going to let it happen. So Wanda's asking, you know, without pestering or being pushy, hey, you could be a gentle saint and it still is not going to get in because it's coming through behavior. Behavior is thrown out immediately and the first order of business. Throw out the behavior of anything that can help this guy. So that's the reason why you can't help them, because you're not dealing with the guy who could have been helped. You're dealing with his child, his mother, his father, and his Freddy. So Tina writes, I'd just like to understand where this came from. I like to think I'd be better if I understood or could grasp what the hell made him fall out of love with me. Apparently, he's felt this way for 2 years. He swears he hasn't changed, but he's a totally different person. So there's Tina in the discovery stage of what we're talking about, right? So this is the reason why I wanted you to, you know, listen to this message from this morning, which is reading this document called the How-To Group Manual. It's called the group how-to manual because the problem is the group. The group put your man into a midlife crisis. You didn't do it. Your group did. The group of your husband did that. As we get, you know, towards the end of this, and we still have another call with more questions to come, but I want to drive home this point that this map that I'm drawing out for you is a practice. The practice is called the route. So you're going from the town where the conscious mind lives. Remember, the conscious mind is the pursuit of happiness. That's the name of the town, the pursuit of happiness. So you leave your town, you go down this tunnel, and the tunnel, as you walk down the tunnel towards the subconscious mind, the tunnel gets larger and wider, taller and wider, until it opens to an opening that's 5,000 feet wide by 2,000 feet tall. And over at the left is the tent where the group lives. The group is the child, the parents, and Freddie, which is the ego. And so what do they specialize in? The child specializes in fear, the parents specialize in judgment, and Freddie specializes in attack. That's what they will do if you're not the leader of minds. They will fear, they will judge, and they will attack. And remember, it's not just the words fear, judgment, and attack. Those are just the headlines of the ideas. Out of fear comes all kinds of things, all kinds of anxiety, worry, uncertainty, doubt. All kinds of words come out of fear. All kinds of other words come out of judgment, criticism, condemnation, blame, etc. Attack, put down, criticism, all kinds of words come out of each of the themes. But fear, judgment, and attack are the main themes of the group. And that's what they do. This is what they do. And if they're doing it to you, if your group is managing you and you are not managing the group, you are not the leader of minds. And if you're not leading the minds, that means the minds are leading you. And now let's talk about what happens when you are not the leader of minds. And you have a midlife crisis husband. What happens when you have a midlife crisis husband and you're not the leader of the group? You don't lead the group. You don't do the route. You don't communicate with the group and quiet them down. You don't connect to your higher self. You don't tell your subconscious mind what you want. And so you have no relationship there. Your whole relationship is all connected to the physical. What did he do? What did he say? How do I feel? What did he do? What did he say? How do I feel? That's all you think about, days, nights, and weekends. You are not the leader of minds. You are being led. And you don't have the ability to see your group. You can't see your inner child and never have a dialogue with it. You can't see your mother and her ways back in those years. You can't see your father and you don't communicate with him. And you don't see your Freddie. So you don't know anybody in the group. All you're doing is thinking about your outer world. And when you're only possessed with your outer world, the group owns you. And now when the group owns you, you put off a thing called a vibration. I call it a thing. It's not. A vibration is an electromagnetic energy. Electromagnetic energy, that's what it is. And you give off a vibration. And midlife crisis men pick up vibration and they live on it. They live on it. In fact, your husband's group gets all their instruction from the vibration that you're giving off. But let's say you don't know anything about your group. What are your vibration? It's the vibration of your group. Your group. Your child who specializes in fear. Your parents who specialize in judgment. Your Freddie that specializes in attack. They are doing they're giving off the vibration. And when I'm talking about vibration, I'm not talking about emotion. An emotional feeling that goes out, that's a different wavelength. That's not a vibration. I'm talking about a deep vibration that is given off. It's electromagnetic vibration that's given off. And your midlife crisis husband can feel it. And I call him your midlife crisis husband because he's not your husband. Your husband is buried somewhere and he's not available to wake up yet. So let's say that you're being managed by your group and he's being managed by his group. What kind of relationship do we have? So I just want you to think about for a moment. If your group is managing you and his group is managing him, what chance do the two of you have to ever getting back to a life of humanness? What chance do you have? I say it's very, very low. But what happens if you would become a person who changes the inner environment of your mind by becoming the leader of minds? That you are going to go through the practice of calming down your inner child, calming down your parents and giving them something to do, your parents of those years, calming down your Freddie and sending him off with something to do. What are you doing now? You're now the leader of minds. And then you leave the tent and you go to the tent that has your higher self. Your higher self is your divine wisdom. And it'll come to you if you'll seek it out. Because it's not invasive like the group is. So when you go seek out your higher self, you're going to find yourself more calm and more connected and more rooted and grounded in what you value and what you love. And you'll be able to think more clearly as well. And that will change your vibration. And now your vibration becomes calm, secure, safe. You feel important and valuable and likable and upbeat. You're giving off a very different vibration. Now what happens when his group picks up that vibration? What are they picking up the vibration of? The vibration of order, the vibration of love, the vibration of self-control. That's what they're picking up. And what does that do to his group? That disturbs his group in the beginning. Initially, they're very disturbed by that. And you might see a radical change in their reaction. But that's temporary. Because then when they start to feel that you're the leader of minds, they start to enter a period of respecting you. Because now they sense that you've got some power, that you are managing your group, you are guiding your group, that you are the leader of minds, and they could feel that. His group can feel what you're doing with your group. And see, all of this is in the realm of energy. None of this is in the realm of behavior. So that's why I would encourage you to get closer to this message about the how-to group manual, because I've seen like amazing stories over and over again of women who have these chaotic, wild, crazy guys, and they start managing their mind, and the group of their husbands starts to pick it up. It's almost as if they start to go, well, we better not mess with her. That's kind of what they're doing. We better not mess with her. We'll stop here. That's the 45-minute call I promised you, so you can get on with your life, and then we'll pick up where I left off. Okay, no questions on the question box. Okay, so I'm going to put the group how-to manual in the handouts again. All right, there that is. And then the tent route picture that I've had on the screen. All right, so that's there. Wait, Lisa just wrote something. She says, so if my inner child is keeping my husband around because I wanted my father around, and that's why I'm keeping my husband around, that makes sense. Does that make sense? Yes, that does make sense. Because, see, if your father abandoned you and your husband is a replacement for your father and your group is telling you, keep this man around. Because if you don't keep this man around, you won't have your father around. That's very, very much how the group operates. They join the past and the present just very, very fast. So the way Lisa wrote this, she said, I wanted my father around, and that's why I'm keeping my husband around. Yes, that's exactly how the group does it. You got to keep no matter how troubling their husband is, no matter how many women he's got on the side, it doesn't matter. You got to keep this man around because that's your father right there. And that's exactly how the group operates. I'm glad you brought that up. And then Beate said, if you know your son has a cheating gene, what do you do? Warn them or let it happen? You can't warn people. You can't warn them because they're not ready to learn. So warning them, that's behavior. That's using your mouth. What is energy? Energy is what you think, imagine, and feel. That's energy. You think a thought, imagine a picture, and feel a feeling. Those are all energy. They're all done in the mind. Behavior is what you do with the body and say with the mouth. So what is a warning? A warning is behavior. And what happens with behavior? You're telling the group, here I come, I'm watching you, better get out of the way, and it's very threatening to the group. It's far better for you to manage your own group in order to guide the group of others. Will they run if they see us succeeding in our group management? It's not like they run. These are children we're talking about, because this is all in the energy realm. When you start successfully managing your group and you start becoming a happier person, give off a very different vibration. And the group, who picks up all vibration, is not ready for that, because that's the vibration of leadership. And so here you are, you're in a relationship with a man who they manage that man, and they don't want to give up that man. And so they're going to manage him all day and night. And then you come along, you show up right there in the house, and you are managing the group, and they could feel the energy of your management and your leading, your ability to lead the group, and they feel it. And the closest way I could describe the reaction is, ooh, geez, don't mess with her. She's in charge. She's in charge. And so you don't have to push your husband around. This is not a behavior thing. This is an energy thing. So when you're leading your group, his group will feel it. You want to just try it out and see if you can start to live this way. When you start to manage your group, when you start to build a relationship with the higher self, when you start to speak to the subconscious mind, when you start doing those practices, you are living a very, very rare life. Virtually no one is living this way. And they'd like to, but they don't understand it. But I'll be back tomorrow morning, and we'll do part three of this recording. And all this is being recorded, and so at the end we'll have all the recordings available, so Beate can get them wherever she wants to get them. And we'll talk to you then. All right, thanks for coming on. Bye-bye.